As a brand, we wanted to be wherever the nation plays together. And there is no bigger place where the nation plays together than India-Pakistan matches. In our category, what I've realized is premiumness is not necessarily rich. It's very unique. I have my product selling in localities which are low-income group, where my highest price products sell. It just depends on the person's commitments towards prayer and God and spirituality, where they believe I want to give the best, I want to offer the best to God. They buy my most premium product. Gen Z, Gen X, all of them pray, all of them believe in God. Any research that we do, we realize that from generation to generation, there are a few things that are passed down. One of them is the usage of incense and prayer, if not regularly, at least occasionally.
Incense is the silent bridge that connects humans to the divine. And naturally, nobody wants to compromise when it comes to their hopes and prayers. This episode of the 1% Project is an intriguing exploration of the incense business and its essence in Indian culture with the remarkable Arjun Ranga, the CEO of Cycle Pure Agarbattis, which is a part of the NR Group. In this insightful conversation, Sarthak, me and Arjun delve into the fascinating journey of Cycle Agarbattis, the world's largest incense manufacturer, and its transformation into the world's first certified zero carbon manufacturer of incense, prayers, and air care products. Arjun also shares his personal journey as the CEO, drawing inspiration from his grandfather and NR Group's founder, Shri N. Ranga Rao. He sheds light on the deep-rooted significance of prayer in Indian culture and the sentiments attached to it, how to navigate, survive, and be a market leader in a highly commoditized market, and much more. Joining him in this conversation is Sarthak Ahuja, a two-time published author, a seasoned chartered accountant with expertise in startup advisory and investment banking, a gold medalist from Indian School of Business, and a LinkedIn top voice who brings a wealth of intriguing insights to this discussion. Join us in this fascinating episode to explore the dynamic interaction of business, culture, and sustainability. Subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to it, and sign up for the 1% Project's Think newsletter at 1%.live for curated content that adds value to your professional and personal development. Stay till the end, where I summarize the key takeaways from this conversation. What is the history of incense? How old is this concept?
You know, the usage of incense dates back to the Egyptian civilization in itself. Thousands of years in scriptures, there is, even in our scriptures, there is usage of dupa for homas and yagnas. In scriptures, the usage of incense in different forms has always been there. You know, frankincense and myrrh was also used in Christianity, in almost all the different religious books as well. But over the years, incense has transcended from being a pure religious product into more of a spiritual product, intertwined with meditation, peace of mind, and all of that also. So the aromacological benefits of fragrance and what it does to one's mood started, I think, about 400 years ago with the advent of fragrances. So burning fragrances started about 400 years ago. And in the current form that we see, the agarbatti stick, it's about 250 years ago in Tanjore, where the king was a connoisseur of incense. So that's where we can look at the current form at which incense is used.
Oh, interesting. So what was the previous form if it was not these long sticks?
It was in raw resins or in a piece or like a log, or it was burnt as a resin stick in itself, what Bakhur is today.
And from there, what is the story of Cycle Agarbatti?
Our brand actually was created by my grandfather. He's a true entrepreneur, a first generation entrepreneur. He was born pre-independence in, I think, 1908, lost his dad when he was just 12 years old. So very early in life, he had to take care of himself, his mother and his grandmother. Comes from a very small village in Madurai district called Vathraipur. If you look at our family lineage, it's either a Purohit or a teacher. You know, his father was a teacher, grandfather was a pandit in a temple. So that's been our lineage. And he was fiercely independent, realized very early that to get ahead in life, he had to get himself multi-skilled. So he learned how to repair timepieces. He used to repair watches in school so that he could pay and get books to study. He would go to the wholesale market, buy some provisions, sell it to the store outside his school. He would take tuitions for low class students. He would go to the old age community and read newspapers to them. You know, he used to do multiple things to ensure that ends met in those days. He also learned shorthand and typing because that was a skill that was important. Always wanted to do something on his own. Got a first job in Arvangad in a cordite factory in Nilgiri. So left his ancestral home, packed up everything, mother, grandmother, and moved there. He got another job as a bookkeeper and cook in Consolidated Coffee Works. Moved to Coorg. My dad was actually born there. And around the time India got independence, the estates, the British left, and all the responsibility came upon him. And that's when he also got a government job. In 1948, Indian government needed people who were qualified, who could manage accounts, things like that. So he got a government job on one side, but he always had this passion of doing something on his own. My grandfather used to write his ledgers. He's written that at some point of time, I want to do something on my own. And he saw the India getting independence as an opportunity to also take the next big step in his life. Imagine the courage and the conviction. The man had 4 children, aged mother, aged grandmother, took a leap of faith, supported by my grandmother, and came to Mysore because it was the nearest town, and started our business in 1948. And my grandmother was the one who first gave him the seed capital by pledging her jewels, as is the case in that generation of sacrifice that they all made. And the rest is history. I think with this fierce commitment and discipline, he was able to build the enterprise that is today.
Among all the opportunities, why was incense something that was chosen to build upon?
So grandfather in 1948 started trading first. Shikakai, tooth powder, and incense. These were the 3 products that were famous in Mysore. If you see the GI tag for these products are also Mysore even today. Agarbatti is called Mysore Agarbatti. Very soon he realized that in Agarbatti he can actually build a core competence because of the fragrance creation that was in it. And he also realized that he could bring in a lot of differentiation to a rather unorganized category. Even in those days, the category was quite unorganized. A lot of innovations happened based on his beliefs on the category, and that's how we were able to create a brand. 1950 is when he actually created the word cycle. And before I get into why cycle or how the name was coined, fragrance creation as a competence is something that has happened from generation to generation. So my grandfather was a perfumer. Imagine in 1949, he was one of the first ones to import books into independent India from France, perfumery books. It took him a year to import these books. Okay, they came in by ship. And with those books, he set up the first perfumery lab. And in 1952, he actually won an award in the Dasara exhibition for the fragrance creations that he had done. And he's a perfumer. My dad's a perfumer. He studied in Switzerland and in Paris. I'm a perfumer myself. Even though I've been practicing for 25 years, I still consider myself an apprentice perfumer. So that knowledge that was imparted from generation to generation is what holds the business together for us. And that kind of remains the core competence. So we are one of the few companies that create our fragrances in-house. Each and every ingredient that goes into it is carefully selected and curated and managed, and I do tons of experiments in the lab to come up with the fragrance that I believe the market would accept. So that's happened over the years. So we had the fragrance creation on one side. And that's something that has built on over the years. And then we then created the brand on the other side.
So. Oh, fascinating. I didn't know that the essence of the incense is actually the fragrance. So 3 generations of perfume experts, if I may. Yeah, and you were talking about the Cycle brand. So why was Cycle?
So grandfather, I think within a year's time, started creating product and taking it to market. One of the first fragrances he created became an instant hit because it was not commodity, it was unique. This was in 1950. And people, when he went to the market selling the product, the storekeeper would either call it by my grandfather's name, which was Ranga, or call it by the color of the packaging, which was, I think, blue in those days. He then realized that this is not sustainable over a period of time. I need to have a symbol or a logo that people will understand. No matter where they are from, what their language is, or their secular background, it didn't matter. And he came up with a lot of different symbols, but ultimately he stuck with cycle, because cycle is called a cycle in every language. And you will not confuse it for something else. It's aspirational in those days. It personified freedom as well. And with the cycle, you can go anywhere. Just like how your prayers can take you anywhere. There's no limit to what you can hope for and dream. So there were a lot of things that connected prayer, being, and the device of a cycle, and the man at the philosophical acumen to understand that this is something that is going to be timeless. And so that's how he came up with the symbol of a cycle and the word cycle itself.
Now we are in 2023. Agarbattis have now become a commodity. And it's a simple product. I was looking into it, how it's manufactured. It's not that hard in terms of putting it together. And there's so many brands. If you go to a shop today and you say, I want some kind of agarbatti, people may ask for cycle or they're also happy with anything else. So how do you keep yourself relevant and innovate in this industry?
So innovation comes in multiple forms, multiple formats also. So you innovate in the fragrance. That's the key differentiator. You also, branding is a key differentiator. Packaging is another. The packaging art is another. But more importantly, you can also innovate in the form factor of the incense itself. So incense sticks in the traditional form is with the bamboo stick. You have now solid dough, which is bamboo-less. We also created a Duno, which is an encapsulation in a charcoal cup, which is something that we innovated recently, which makes prayer a lot easier and more convenient. There are multiple formats in which you innovate, and all of these categories also are starting to grow and build over the years. And what do you do in a commodity market? You differentiate through quality. Quality is at the center of everything. Why do people pray with incense? It's morning. That's the easiest form of prayer. It's the most convenient. You take your lighter two sticks, offer it to God, you pray. At that point of time, the ambience that is created during the prayer, also the fact that the sticks have to completely burn, are the two most important aspects that people look at. And in the unorganized sector, where the quality is not the primary driver, but the pricing is the primary driver, that's where it falls behind. We do close to 24 different quality checks on our incense sticks. Each and every incense stick, and trace it back to the manufacturer and the person who actually made it for me. We have close to 25,000 families in the supply chain. I can trace it back to each person. And that's a lot of traceability that we've built over the years. And that's what makes a brand over a period of time, the trust that consumers build. In a commodity market, entry barriers are low, like in our category. You can get raw incense sticks. Dime a dozen manufacturers of fragrances who do the same fragrances for soaps, detergents, and toilet cleaners will also give you a fragrance for incense. And printers are so many in the country. Buy packaging, buy raw incense sticks, buy fragrance, and tomorrow you're a manufacturer. But day after tomorrow, you move on to something else. Brands that have lived over generations are the ones who have actually been careful about the quality that they create. And I think eventually consumer will pay value for it. And that's how we've been able to survive.
You mentioned how the form factor is a differentiator. And you also mentioned how the scent itself can be a differentiator. But when I think of prayers in our usual Indian household, it's mostly sandal, rose, jasmine. Scents are very predefined with respect to what an Indian typical Hindu or a Muslim or a Christian household would like. So how do you innovate there in bringing other scents, which they would think is also relevant and they can attach to prayer? What do you think with newer scents, the use case for the incense sticks would also change to something else? Maybe setting the mood in one's bedroom. I don't know how the brand likes to position itself.
It's easier for us to move from the puja room to the living room and other parts of the house. We have a brand called Iris, which is a home fragrance product where we have scented candles, potpourri, diffusers, aromatherapy oils, also incense that are non-puja related. But the nation prays with cycle and with incense. That's 95% of the market. That being said, we have jasmine as a fragrance, right? Mogra. I create about 14 different types of jasmine fragrances. There's jasmine where you have to capture the early morning dew that falls on the petals of the jasmine flower. There's a tint of rose in the jasmine. There's an animalic note in the jasmine flower as well. So there are different kinds of notes that you can create just with one linear jasmine in itself. So it's an art of perfumery. And if I ask you, what soap do you use and what is the fragrance of the soap? You won't remember. What deodorants do you use? What is the fragrance of the deodorant? Almost any fragrance in the world is built on just 5-6 core notes. And then you create an accord on top of that and make it more and more exciting and mysterious. So perfumery is actually an art and a science. And how do you make your sandalwood smell better than somebody else's sandalwood is the challenge. How do you differentiate between a commodity jasmine and a branded jasmine is the challenge, both from a packaging standpoint, registered trademark, copyright standpoint, but most importantly, uniqueness of the fragrance in itself. Our highest selling product, for example, is Cycle 3-in-1, which are three unique fragrances that stand for health, wealth, and happiness. The most important pillars of anybody. And that's the highest sold product in the country. the most duplicated product as well. And the three fragrances are not jasmine, rose, and sandal.
This also brings me to think that imagine an end consumer cannot really differentiate between the 12 notes of jasmine unless they were to smell all of them together and be able to tell, okay, this one probably smells sweeter or this one is slightly mellow. So do you think for an end consumer who's actually smelling incense sticks at different points of times, they're not really doing a blind test in one go. Do you think something like the scent stays for longer in the air after the incense stick has burnt out is an important metric for you to work on? Is it something that your competitors work on?
It is a given. It's become a marketing gimmick for a few. Retention is a very important aspect. You know, your prayer, the incense stick typically burns for anywhere between 30 to 45 minutes. Your prayer lasts about 20 minutes. And then there is a residual fragrance that stays on. You leave, you go to work, you come back in the evening at home and you open the doors. You want to be able to still smell some part of the divinity that you left behind in the morning. That's a given in the category. And we are able to do that in almost any product that we create. So that's a given. In terms of differentiating between the 11 notes of jasmine, I don't need you to smell all the 11 jasmines. I need to be able to give you the jasmine that you're going to like the most. And that's where marketing and differentiation and packaging comes in. The way you stylize your packaging, for you to pick the jasmine that you're going to like, how close is the packaging designed to the fragrance that's inside? What ambience are you creating with the communication? I think all of that falls into the branding aspect as well, where you're able to create the fragrance, not just from a smell standpoint, but also from an experience standpoint on the packaging design.
So up till now, two things that I would have not thought about agarbattis. One, it burning through and through is a definite KPI that needs to be hit. For some reason, I used to think if it is not burning through, then God may is not probably that happy. I don't know. There's some kind of stigma to it.
Yes.
And the second thing that you basically mentioned is retention. Agarbatti and retention, I would have never connected. If the fragrance stays along and when you come back, it reinforces the fact that you did something in the morning, which actually gives you a pleasant experience once you're back.
Exactly.
You talked about fragrances. Obviously, India is a very diverse market. Do you see that different parts of India have different adoptions or choices in terms of agarbattis or the perfumes? Are there any distinctive characteristics across India?
You go 100 kilometers, you'll find a different fragrance, a different brand, different product. The industry is so fragmented and highly localized. There's no reason why one market picks up some product over the other. But there is a level of herd mentality for sure. If some product somebody likes in some market, it could be even a retailer whose wife liked the fragrance. Then he'll push that more. And then once he pushes that product more, the neighbor would want to have the same product as well. And this category follows a lot of such fads, and not a trend yet, but a lot of fads. There was this big fad of pineapple fragrances that was big the last year or two. And so all of us had pineapple in the market. There was one small company out of Gujarat who created the first pineapple. And then everybody followed suit. The whole nation was only talking about pineapple for about 6 months. Today, fatigue has set in, and so we moved on to something else. But yeah, that definitely does happen. But very seldom do you see a national range of a fragrance that's created. But locally, you will always have some nuanced requirements for certain fragrances based on, it could be climate, could be other situations, but in general, there is no prediction of who likes what, when, why, where, how. In the household, one person may like one and the next person lighting the incense may like something else.
Would you say there's some secret insight that you have with respect to which fragrance to push in which part of India that you wouldn't want to give away? I mean, I'm just thinking that maybe in Muslim households, there would be possibly something to do with liking rose more. And I'm just thinking from a very pedantic perspective of how Ruh Afza is considered to be it's got a very Muslim identity to it. Then even when you have iftar parties, Ruh Afza is almost a necessity. So do you think that way culturally certain fragrances have just crept into certain communities and you see that in your sales data as well?
No, absolutely not in our case. Fragrance preferences is so personal and so individualistic. What my wife likes, I don't like. My own products. So typically the purchasing decision maker in the household decides what incense to buy. Nobody else actually takes that call. And more so if they're a connoisseur of incense and are very involved in their prayer, this is one of the most important products that they spend a lot of time and effort on purchasing. And also the usage also depends on the purchase pattern, where they're going to light the incense stick. Is it an open yard? Is it the tulsi outside? Is it the puja mandir inside? Is it when they're going to pray at home, immaterial of what kind of household it is? Is it in a mosque or in a temple or a church? Is that where they're going to go light the incense stick? All of that becomes equally important. The usage is multiplies. 95% of them use it for prayer. And the ambience that is created during prayer determines the fragrance as well. And unlike what you would think, it's not any single generic fragrance that sells most. If I have a cycled rose, I don't have a cycled rose at all. None of the big brands do. We all have curated accords, creations that we market. By the way, I like rose quite a bit. I have it actually in the office. So when guests come in, I offer them rose. So I think it's purely choice.
Premium positioning of the product. Generally, most of us buy agarbattis or incense in panchur ki dukan or maybe a supermarket these days. But has the industry evolved to a place where it can be a premium product in a premium store? Does that kind of channel exist for this kind of a product?
No, definitely. Khan Market, for example, they sell quite a bit of premium products as well. It depends on the store, actually, not necessarily the customer that goes to the store. Has it transcended to become a cool product to say, haan, hamare ghar mein ye lagta hai? Yes, it has. Few products of ours has transcended that background. But in our category, what I've realized is premiumness is not necessarily rich. It's very unique. I have my products selling in localities which are low-income group, where my highest priced products sell. It just depends on the person's commitments towards prayer and God and spirituality. Where they believe, I want to give the best, I want to offer the best to God, they buy my most premium product. Typically, I wouldn't want to say the wealthier, but households that are not involved in the daily prayers at home are agnostic of the product that is bought. For them, Agarbatti is a name on the list, the shopping list that the maid goes and buys from the store next door and comes home. So, when I communicate, it is not necessarily advertising towards the ultra premium households of India. The challenge remains in identifying who is that pious devout who wants to offer the best to God, right, on one side. And on the lifestyle home fragrance side, the positioning is very clear for my brands like Iris and Leah and all of that, where it is typical SEC, A, B, and C, whatever all the FMCG companies do, we typically target that way.
Before we get into the international market and exports of Agarbatti, this is out of curiosity. I have always seen, and I'm sure Sarthak as well, all our lives we have seen Agarbatti to be a B2C product. Is there a B2B channel as well for Agarbattis? I'm assuming the temples, the mosque, the church, because they have a high usage of this on a regular daily basis.
Actually, they don't at all, not in the last 30 years. Mosques do to some extent, not churches or temples. Most temples recycle the incense that they sell outside. They give it back to the storekeeper outside. Temples have the least sales of incense since I've joined the business since 25 years. And incense typically that's sold around the temple is not the best of quality. Because you just keep it on the thali, you offer it to the pandit inside and they give you the flowers back. The incense again comes back out and then the next person takes the same incense back in. Typically, that's how it happens. So incense per se around temples is not as much. Churches are more in candles and resin, not as much incense. But some churches do use incense as well. It's not a necessity to be present in a B2B kind of a scene from a religious standpoint. But yeah, there are huge B2B opportunities with modern trade outlets, with corporate gifting, with institutional sales as well. Quite a few of the hotel chains religiously light incense from morning to night. Leela Bombay is an example 20 years ago that would only light her woods incense in their entrance lobby throughout the day. And that became their signature fragrance. So yeah, so B2B is a big opportunity, but B2C still is the larger market.
Vanilla is probably the most used perfume or fragrance in a lot of premium stores. It could be a bakery. It could actually be a designer store. What is the association to that? I'm just walking, suddenly I'll pass a premium store and I will suddenly smell vanilla.
Yeah, vanilla gives warmth, okay? A feeling of warmth. And there's a lactonic note in vanilla, which is very milky. So that warmth and the milky note actually makes you feel very peaceful. So that's what vanilla does. And today, vanilla with sandalwood, the woody, strong, ivory note is what most people aspire in any confined space so that you feel very comfortable and it gives you a feeling of opulence as well. That's why when you're walking past, you'll smell that in quite a few places.
Agarbatti exports are close to 1,000 CR from India. And the three key markets that was surprising to me was Gulf, Europe, and Africa. Can you double click on that? Why are these three markets the top three importers?
Firstly, there is a misconception that Indian Agarbatti is positioned towards expats of India. It is not. Everywhere outside of India, it's the locals who use Agarbatti. Incense sticks. It's not positioned towards Indians at all, except in the US through the Indian grocery stores. But everywhere else, it's the locals who use incense. And incense is exported to over 150 countries, Indian incense. And the new developing markets are South America. Brazil, for example, it's a rage. Teenagers use incense. Everybody uses incense there. Just like how yoga and Ayurveda have become mainstream, incense has become mainstream too, most of these countries. Traditional markets for incense was Middle East, Southeast Asia, East Africa, and parts of Europe. And they remain to be the case. Consumption is quite high, and it's used daily for prayer by the locals.
Can you talk about the value chain?
Agarbatti is a very simple product. You need just a bamboo stick, and then three natural materials are then applied onto the bamboo stick. It is called jigat, which is bark of a tree, charcoal and wood powder. The three are mixed in calculated quantities with water. It becomes a dough-like paste like atta that is then applied onto the bamboo stick. That is the unscented stick. It has no fragrance. It's neutral. That is then either dipped or fragrance is then injected into it. And that's how it becomes a fragrance stick. Traditional method of incense making is called masala incense, which is our premium incense. Instead of water, we put fragrance directly into the stick and then roll the bamboo stick along with herbs, resins, and all of that. It's a very simple product to make, and that's why we have so many unorganized players as well.
Would you also be able to explain the unit economics typically? Is it standard for the industry?
More or less, the raw incense stick is now a commodity. So the fragrance cost, and then your packaging on top of it, and then your sales and distribution. So it's typically basic. Most people do it exactly the same way.
Okay. So you'd say about raw material, packaging, and fragrance would be about, say, 30% of...
It completely depends on the quality of ingredients that go into the raw sticks that you make, also the type of fragrances that you create. So typically any packet, a 10 rupee product will have anywhere between 10 sticks to 14 sticks. So consumer will be paying anywhere between a rupee to 75 paisa per stick.
There are now newer brands who say that we use recycled petals and we make incense sticks. What I'm trying to understand is, do you think it would already happen? It's just a narrative that they've now brought it to market to say how they would say toothpaste mein namak, where it would already be there, but now it's being marketed to differentiate.
Yeah, Sarthar, I think you hit the nail on the head. We've been doing it for 25 years actually, but we didn't have the thought to market it like that. We'll lesson learned. I think the new digital era is teaching us a lot of things for us to also learn from. A few things we never believed to claim, being a conservative company, we never claimed a lot of things that we were doing. And if we had claimed it, probably we would have been ahead in the market. But a lesson learned, we should probably do it now. Exactly what you said.
So now let's talk about your journey of taking up the organization, as you said, conservative values. How did you transition?
Deeply committed to quality, financial discipline, taking care of our employees, giving back to society, always sticking to the promises that we make, never give false commitments. So these are some core values that I hold very dear that got passed on from my grandfather to the second generation. To be honest, it's the second generation of our family business. My grandfather passed away in 1980. I think he retired in 1968. My uncle, Chairman Mr. Guru, my dad, Mr. Murthy, and Mr. Vasu and his brothers, they're the ones who actually built the business to the level that it is. We became number one in India, I think, around 1970. And they're the ones who actually brought in all the innovation, the organized distribution, the entire concept of branding, moved away from a traditional trading network of Agarbatti in wholesale and Agarbatti dealers to organized FMCG distribution. All of this brought in technology. We were one of the first folks to actually buy a pro computer for looking at sales and sales forecasting. This was in 1980. I used to love going to the office because I could sit in the AC room. That was the only room that had an air conditioner, the computer room. This massive room with, and it was on the lock and key, I remember, in the late 80s. So yeah, so the innovation started to happen very early in the business. Not just in the incense sticks, but also looking at diversification as an opportunity. We got into floral extracts and herbal extracts as a group, started manufacturing shampoos, got into instant foods and home products, started pharmaceuticals as a group. So got into electronics as well, doing a lot of different things in the group. So beyond just incense, innovation, keeping the entrepreneurial spirit going or something where it was in the DNA of the business in itself. The brothers did that. When I came back and joined the business in 2000, I'd already learned about the business because every summer vacation would be in the office with dad. I had the luck of growing up in a joint family till I was 17. So any dinner room conversations were around the business. Incense that was lit in the corner of the house every day. New formula, new accords, new fragrances would keep coming home, keep smelling, understanding what fragrances are. So these learnings were always there in me. Remember when I was in, I think, 8th or 9th standard, dad took me on summer vacation to do van sales in Kerala market in Cochin. I went in a van with dad for 4 days selling one of our new products called Heritage. We just launched it. It was always there in me. I came back after my MBA working outside for a couple of years, 2000. India was just also taking off. Second generation had built that solid foundation. I could then start really discovering myself with small projects that the family gave me to do. And slowly I eased my way into managing the entire business in about 4 to 5 years. I think by 2004 is when I took over. So it was handed to me. I didn't actually take over anything. And could bring in technology because of the financial discipline that we had. I never had to worry about sitting behind a cash register like most of my other competitors. Even today, I have a challenge. I could look at scaling the business, look at HR processes to bring in. I moved away from Tally, got a Microsoft ERP put in, and then now we are on SAP completely. Brought in Salesforce automation. Within the incense category itself, got into high-end lifestyle and home fragrance products. Got into spiritual products as well on the other side. Camphor, Dia, Cotton Wicks, Kumkum, Turmeric, Chandan Tika, oil for prayer, and all of that. So could completely diversify from being a single product company into a multi-category distribution and manufacturing company as well. So all of this, without the support and guidance of the second generation and my cousins, we couldn't have done so. And I get the courage to do what we did because of the team that I have. Blessed to have such fantastic employees working in our Innar Parivar that back every decision that I take, that go all out to ensure that we do the right thing every single time.
But now, do you think that where a few D2C brands are coming in, does that also tell you that, okay, there is probably a growing opportunity of untapped distribution channels on which the team is building or working on separately, for example, marketing through Instagram to make incense cool again among Gen Z and millennials? You mentioned that in Brazil, teenagers are now using incense. In fact, a lot of the street wear culture, the street fashion, all of it actually comes from the West. Countries in South America actually adopt it faster from the US than India does. So do you think again a wave might come where maybe a new positioning for incense for Gen Z through D2C, through Instagram might come, which is like an opportunity to make a premium product?
Oh, definitely. See, we are very active on D2C as well. We have our own e-com website called cycle.in. We have our own spirituality and well-being e-magazine called soulweather.com, where we talk about spirituality being culture, all of that. We have our own services called pureprayer.com, where you can book any puja service and any temple, get a lot of different homas and yagnas done for you, all of that. So now we are in that space and we are very active. We have a dedicated team that is working on our entire social media presence and targeting and management of all of that. Definitely a big opportunity. But what we need to remember is this category has almost a 85% penetration in India. And it's not going anywhere. Gen Z, Gen X, all of them pray. All of them believe in God. Any research that we do, we realize that from generation to generation, there are a few things that are passed down. One of them is the usage of incense and prayer, if not regularly, at least occasionally. And it will remain cool with the entire Indianness and the Bharat movement that we're seeing. It becomes part of who we are as people. Just connecting that in that, also becoming sustainable and socially relevant is the key factor for us. We are the only zero carbon incense manufacturer in the world. We completely offset our plastic footprint. We are plastic neutral already. 6 years ahead of what we had planned to be. We use only 100% recyclable packaging material. We are OSHA certified for occupational health and safety. We are in the progress of getting a lot of new certifications as well for us to be compliant at the scale that we are. So we just need to learn how to communicate our story better.
What is a counterintuitive insight about this industry?
It's not a commodity. It's not as simple as you think it is. It is a very involved decision for a person who believes in prayer and believes in God. Care for the product, care for the category, ensure that you create world-class products. More so for all the unorganized players who come in and sit on margin and promotion and offering left and center to the trade just to get the product pushed. focus on the end consumer. I think that's something that industry needs to get back to doing.
What is your biggest quality or ability as a leader?
I trust people wholeheartedly, completely back my team that I work with, give them whatever support they require to take the decisions that they need to take. I think that's also my weakness.
Cycle has been promoting sports and sponsoring the Indian cricket team. And Saurabh Ganguly has been a part of the journey as well. So can you double click on that?
Yeah, so, you know, as a brand, we wanted to be wherever the nation prays together. And there is no bigger place where the nation prays together than India-Pakistan matches. And that happened in 2005 when India was hosting Pakistan for the first time after many years. And we got an opportunity to actually be the main sponsor of that tournament because one of the MNCs had to back out last minute because they didn't get approval from their APAC headquarters or something like that. So who would a media agency call but a family business who can take a decision over a phone? I got a call and overnight I could, being the person I am, I bargained my way into getting the price that I needed, and then we were on to cricket, and that opened up Pandora's box of opportunity for us, where we had a tagline then called "Everyone has a reason to pray." And that's when the third umpire had just come in, and then when the pending decision comes in, everyone has a reason to pray would flash, and then it kind of become an instant connect with the brand. And then we continue to be present in cricket. More than a consumer, my trade partners and my employees get extremely motivated when they see my brand next to Hero or Airtel on an India cricket match. It gives you a sense of pride as well. That's the reason why we've been on cricket for so many years. But if you look at our overall advertising outlay, it's still focused on SEC, BNC, ABNC, of course, and Housewife, who's the purchasing decision maker, typically on the GEC channels.
Very interesting how I just observed the other day, Pritesh and I were discussing how marketing in India is all about ABC, right? Astrology and faith, Bollywood and cricket. And you've covered all of them. Amitabh Bachchan is your brand ambassador. What more could you really get? And then you were really not giving yourself due credit when you said you're not doing much in terms of branding and narrative. Compared to the newer players, you are the original gangster, if I may use that term.
For sure. No, I need to be telling a lot more stories of what we do, what we stand for. Now, we support so many different initiatives from a social enterprise standpoint. For example, Gachiroli, tribal women who have been displaced due to the local law and order problems that they have, almost 1,500 women, now we support them. We've been supporting them the last 15 years. Many parts of the country, we continue to do that, but we don't tell these stories at all, you know, in a nice, consumable Instagram format. Something I'm trying to learn.
1.4 billion people pray the most when there is an India-Pakistan match. Irrespective you follow cricket or you don't, it's just in your DNA.
The nation prays together, and whenever the nation prays together, we want to be there as a brand. Because we've been here since independence. With every prayer of the nation, somewhere Cycle would have been part of their prayer, you know. Ryan launched the day of the launch, the ISRO chairman would have prayed, and Ardzari would have prayed with Cycle.
What do you see the journey of the Cycle Agarbatti brand in the next 10 years?
Definitely want to transition from just being an Agarbatti brand, become a prayer brand. Prayer and well-being, I think, are the center of who we are, because we believe in doing the right thing and ensuring that the future generation's hopes are also fulfilled. So transitioning from just being an Agarbatti brand, which is the core of who we are, but becoming a prayer and spirituality and being brand is the journey that I'm on.
You would have evaluated a number of business opportunities, diversification. Is there one you did not take a decision on, and it turned out to be a decision you would have liked to have taken?
Oh, yeah, definitely. 10 years ago, I had the opportunity to get into the spiritual business of what I have done now after I lagged behind. I just got into it 4 years ago. I should have done it 14 years ago. Spirituality and well-being, because it is part of who we are. Your puja room, incense is just one part of the puja room. Be part of every touch point of the devotees in the prayer gambit. The other category that I think is big opportunity that I should have been part of is the spiritual foods, like something that I'm working on now. Or see where it takes us, all the millets and the ragis and all of that.
What made you not take a chance 14 years ago?
The reason I would probably have not done it then is I believed that I need to have competence in the business to be actually differentiated in the marketplace. I didn't realize that I could look at my distribution in itself as a differentiator. I didn't realize that access to market in itself is a huge opportunity. And I could have worked with scientists. I've set up an application lab now and all of that. I always believe that something in the core I need to be able to create to differentiate. And now more and more I learn and understand as I mature, as I gain experience, few things that I can outsource, things I need to adhere to, the values, the delivery of quality, differentiation, the branding. These are things that are also a key differentiator. I've taken these things for granted in my younger age.
Do you see the industry getting disrupted by AI?
For sure. I think aspects of the business are already getting affected. The demand planning, supply chain, our ability to predict consumer trends, all of that. You know, my Salesforce automation, for example, I have 2,000 sales guys in the market every day servicing my 5,000 distributors. We directly go to about 9 lakh retail outlets. AI will play a pivotal role in that. We've done some experimentation with a few boutique firms on seeing and doing predictive analysis of what a store might require, what is the purchase pattern in that particular neighborhood, things like that. So you will see a lot of disruption happening that where consumers' purchasing behavior and their experiences will only get better. Because in familiarity and ability to predict what you want is what we are all working towards.
Arjun, that was a fascinating conversation. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much, guys. Wonderful. I think very thought-provoking. A lot of very super questions. Wonderful talking to you all. Best of luck and have a wonderful day.
Thank you.
Jai Hind.
Hope you enjoyed the conversation. Here are the key takeaways. Number one. Premiumness in the agarbatti industry isn't necessarily associated with wealth, but uniqueness and commitment to spirituality. Even in the low-income segment, individuals who are deeply committed to prayer and spirituality choose to buy premium products as offerings to God. This unique consumer behavior challenges the conventional notion of premium products being exclusively for affluent households. Number two. Scent retention holds significant importance in scent industry, especially during prayers that can last for extended periods. Beyond the initial 20 minutes of the prayer, a residual fragrance should continue to evoke a sense of divinity and spirituality in the surrounding. Number three, in the competitive world of incense production, innovation isn't limited to fragrance. It extends to packaging, form factor, and most critically, quality. If you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone who will find it valuable. For any recommendations and feedback, you can drop me a line at pritish@1%.live. The email is in the show notes. Until next time.